Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, somewhat beast, Williams.
Thanks. I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, I don't know how I feel about this movie, but still we're here. Also with us is intern slash part-timer slash stenographer Amy.
Yay!
Who is here with us as we kick off the first of two episodes celebrating anime in the month of anime, or in the month of May. We'll figure that out. Yeah. Either way, we got a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the 2021 release film Belle, which hit the Cannes Film Festival circuit as well as making it to wide theatrical releases. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see it until as of recently, and I got things to say. So before we dive into that, Spencer, give us them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out over on the website wherever we got allegedly over 300 episodes. I can still say allegedly. We got everything but from action, anime, comedy, even previous celebrations of anime as well. You can find, if you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire to any one of those places. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow, give us a subscribe, and listen in. If you think we deserve it, give us a 5-star review. I think we've earned it.
We have.
At this point, yes.
That's right.
At this point. When have we not?
Screaming episodes?
No, those are worth it.
I mean, those are even more so.
More worth it than the regular ones.
I was going to say, even more so, those deserve 5-star reviews because those took work. Okay? we will give you social links at the end of the episode. We are excited here to bring you anime in the month of May. And it's one of those traditions that we typically do. When it's not, typically May doesn't always tend to be a busy month. So we try to squeeze in as much anime in the month of May as possible. And this month, particularly, we had two free slots where we could fit something in terms of that. Because obviously we had Star Wars Day, May the 4th.
Yep.
And then we had, of course, the finality to the trilogy from James Gunn in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. That was the last episode, Lesson 355. So we have some time because there's no way in the world we're going to review Fast X.
No.
I have to watch 10 movies.
I have to watch 10 movies as well, even though I saw number 3. But I didn't watch Hobbs and Shaw.
I was going to say, so that's 10. 11. What was that, 10?
No,
that's
11.
That's 11.
Dang it, including, really? But I saw 3.
Including Fast X, he means.
Oh.
So
yeah, because Hobbs and Shaw is not a
X,
one.
You know, Roman numeral for 10. Yeah, I don't know. You know what's interesting?
X is going to give it to you.
For the most part, you can find most of the Fast and Furious movies on Paramount, or Universal, or Peacock, I mean. But for a time, they were on HBO Max. And that kind of went the way of the dodo because they do that whole rollover thing where they let movies go. And I don't know. You were saying, Spencer, you had some very strong feelings apparently for HBO Max.
I don't like them.
Okay.
Well, just flat out don't
as
like
we dive
them.
Into our review now.
From
ahead.
Just a technical level, their app is trash. Hot trash. It's been that way for years. They have no signs of fixing it, I guess.
They don't want to.
But
there's also a new platform that's supposedly coming that's just Max.
Yeah. Duh.
Yeah.
Duh.
I don't know.
the bottom of the barrel, really. That's what I feel about HBO. Because, like, the thing is that their app has been garbage for just the whole time.
Since the beginning. Let's just be honest. Since the beginning.
Like, it's maybe gone up slightly, but, like, I tried to watch this movie, and, like, my thing crashed on me. Like,
you know, HBO Max is probably the only streaming app that I use that takes longer to actually get to my list of movies than any other app out there. Like HBO Max will go so slow. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I wonder if it's like this for everybody. And everybody else still has the same issue. It's like it moves at the speed of like a snail. And it's never been fixed. There's been several updates, I would hope. Maybe. But it's never gotten better. And I feel like one of the things that this is kind of, not to sound, you know, apocalyptic or anything, but the sign of the times as we're moving towards like more unified streaming services, I feel like we've come to an age of convenience when it comes to streaming movies and so forth, that I think we're going to get back to a place where we just have a collection of our own like digital copies of movies. And, you know, because HBO, like Amy was mentioning, HBO is turning into Max now, with combination of Discovery and I believe there's another thing.
HBO.
No. HBO's combining with HBO. It's no, HBO squared.
Well, and remember, HBO also has TMC, Turner Classic Movies, as Cartoon well Network, as Cartoon Studio Network, Ghibli, Sesame
Adult
Street.
Swim.
Like, they got a fairly large chunk of the market. And Warner Brothers always, you know, that's...
Oh, yeah, Warner Brothers as well. Yeah. I just want to forget that recent Matrix movie.
I chose not to remember
but,
it.
But it's one of those things where, like, I really feel like people are just seeing more and more the necessity of not having to have a streaming platform.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look, there's about a million other apps that are out there that either mirror the content from those channels or have some sense of like a faux cable box, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sling TV is one of those ones that I feel like is just coming up and up.
Also Pluto.
Pluto is another one.
Oh, that's right.
So it's becoming more and more of a situation where if there's a series you want, and actually I kind of got this mentality from you, Spencer, because if there's a series that comes out and you really want to see it, you buy the whole series. You buy each episode on like YouTube or whatever, on whatever platform, and then you have them so you can reflect on them or you can watch them as they come out.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these streaming apps don't necessarily get the most recent version of certain shows or things like that, or the things that are more popular, so to speak. So people can just move to the realm of like, okay, well, I'm just going to buy it then and have it instead of waiting for HBO to bring it out or waiting for whoever. You know, because let's be honest, the quality of Netflix movies is hit or miss. We've talked about that on this show for like several times.
You want to know something interesting? I haven't really talked to you about this.
Oh boy.
Is that the combination of both HBO and for different reasons, Disney has kind of started pushing me to, when I buy movies, I buy them on Blu-ray now.
Oh.
Because like, well, the reason Disney has a hand is this because they keep updating their movies after the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I want the one version.
Yeah.
No updates.
Yeah, I want to see Daryl Hannah's butt. No. So
leave that coffee cup in there.
Exactly. And I mean, speaking of Disney Plus is going the same route as HBO Max with their moving towards rolling over content so that way it goes away at a certain point.
Yeah, I remember
that. Which is idiotic because
so confusing.
Part of their promise at the beginning of Disney Plus's whole debut was that we were gonna open the vault. Everything was going to be available to every fan, every subscriber. You were going to have access to all of these things that, you know, you may not be able to buy in stores, or if you wanted the platinum edition of Aladdin, you can just watch it now.
But
in the
it's
most
not even that. Like, let's be very honest. As you talked about, things were getting changed. Disney went and did a whole 180 on a lot of things in their catalog where they're like, hey, we don't want to show the original shot of Lilo climbing into the dryer. In Lilo and Stitch, we're going to make it look like a fort next to a washer.
They have you seen that? So have you seen Lilo and Stitch?
Yeah, I've seen Lilo and
so
Stitch.
So do you know the
That's
scene?
That's the one, the whole plane thing that they edited out.
Yeah, that turned into mountains because it was a city originally and there was a sequence.
Well, that was before the movie released.
They planned that one.
There's a scene. So there's a scene at the beginning of the movie where Lilo has ran home. What's the sister's name?
I almost wanted to say Nani, but I don't know if it's...
No, I think it is Nani. Where the sister is running home because, you know, she asked... Lilo wasn't at school to get picked up. So she runs home. The social worker's on her way. She's rushing.
Cobra bubbles.
And then so after that whole encounter, Lilo's hiding. And when she goes to find her, she finds her in the dryer. And she, like, has a blanket ready. She, you know, pretends to close the door. And then Lilo slowly comes out of the dryer. And then she captures her in a blanket kind of thing. Well, in the updated version on Disney Plus, the dryer has now turned into a shelf, and the door for the dryer is a pizza box. And it still looks like Lilo's coming out of some type of compartment, but she is waltzing out of the pizza box, you know, and Nani catches her. So it's interesting, like, if you as a parent need to be reminded that your children should not play hide and seek in the dryer, you maybe should rethink your parenting style. Because if a movie's going to encourage your child and they're going to, you know, enact it, then, you know, maybe you shouldn't show that to your kids. Plain and simple. But yeah,
that requires people to take responsibility for things.
Oh, this is America. That will never happen. We barely have hard enough time taking responsibility for the things we do out in public. So, but yeah, HBO, I feel like with all the streaming platforms that are out there and the streaming wars that is currently happening within, you know, the entertainment industry, honestly, the unification of some of these apps might be the best thing, to where it's no longer multiple apps, but it's just like a handful, like maybe two or three. Because I mean, that's kind of where the success of Hulu comes in, because Hulu carries multiple things. They're the Hulu plus 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 or whatever, including regular TV as well. And you could essentially remove certain platforms from, like, you know, HBO or things like Amazon. Like, I tend to stick towards Amazon because Amazon has just the more accessible channels that I'm looking for and things like that. So,
and for scary things.
For the channels that I'm looking for.
Scary things.
So, but I don't know, Spence. It looks like you might be just up a creek with this one.
Yeah.
Just like that, huh?
Yeah.
The fight is all gone.
No, it's more of like, you know, I'm just not going to subscribe to their service.
There you go.
Or you're just going to borrow it.
Or at least until you finish watching this. I mean, you did see this movie, right, that we're talking about?
Yes, I did see this movie.
Well then, all right.
Once. Speaking, it happened once.
I know.
And it was years ago.
We could talk about that.
Yes, and it lives in infamy. Speaking of HBO Max as to where we saw this film, this brings us to our recent, or our conversation of the evening, and that is our review on 2021's Belle. I keep saying
because it feels like it needs to have more of a title, right?
It does. Like, it really does. This movie is the most simplest of titles in English. In Japanese, it's The Dragon and the Freckled Princess. Don't ask me why, like, they changed it. But either way. Spencer's already frustrated.
No, because, like, when that title actually makes sense about why I was having a hard time finding who voiced the Beast, because there was someone listed as the dragon, and I'm like, there's no dragon character in this movie. We're going to talk about the English section in a bit.
Yes, well, we are.
Speaking of talking about, before we get into that, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Suzu is a shy, everyday high school student living in a rural village. For years, she has only been a shadow of herself, but when she enters you, a massive virtual world, she escapes into her online persona as Belle, a gorgeous and globally beloved singer. One day, her concert is interrupted by a monstrous creature chased by vigilantes. As their hunt escalates, Suzu embarks on an emotional and epic quest to uncover the identity of the mysterious beast and to discover her true self in a world where you can be anyone.
Written and directed by Mamoru Hosada, the film stars a plethora of voice actors and actresses in a multitude of languages, to be honest. You have everything from Kaho Nakamura, Ryo Narita, Shoto Somatani, all the way to English actors such as Chase Crawford and Manny Jacinto and Kylie McNeil, Hunter Schafer. There's a whole slew of folks in this. Brandon Eggman. There's a lot of people.
Understatement.
And that's not even accounting for, like, because this movie, because it debuted at the Cannes Film Festival, also carries a very large multitude of other voice actors from other countries. There's a Polish version. There's obviously a lot, and it's known for that. So a couple key pieces about this film. This film actually marks Studio Chizu's 10th anniversary. So from 2021, so that means they started out in 2011. which is that when Summer Wars came out?
No, Summer Wars came out in 2009.
Oh, so 2 years later. Which, actually, now that brings up another one, because the director actually also made another successful anime film, which was Summer Wars.
Yes.
Which I was introduced to that by intern Amy.
Haha, I win. One thing.
Yeah. another piece of information based loosely upon the Beauty and the story Beauty and the Beast. Both characters are named Belle. Both fall in love with a monster that is judged by their appearance. Both main characters are appreciated by society, and both stop the villain who we thought was the monster. This movie is essentially a modern take on like the internet telling of a story of Beauty and the Beast. So it's essentially a Japanese Disney movie. Last but not least, the main theme and first song heard in the movie is by the Japanese music group Millennium Parade. And there are actually many subtle hints and references to the group within the film. If you've seen the film, I'm not all too familiar with Millennium Parade, but there's a lot of different instances in the film that do allude to the group's their appearance, their style, even I guess one of the characters appears in some of the or in one of the music videos. Who knows? But as we kick off the month of anime, I know we're doing a great job here.
Such a good job. So proud of us. Go us. 5 stars.
So we're going to be talking about this film. And obviously, it's been out for a little bit. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, it is on HBO Max. We will be talking about spoilers. So this is your warning. Spoiler alert, yeah. So let's talk first about our experience with anime. I know we've usually talked about this several times, but I like doing the refresher because of the fact that over the course of a year, new things come up and new things catch our eye. So instead of talking about our like history, I want to know, has your like view on anime or has your outlook on anime in the last year or so stayed the same, or has it changed in the time? And I want to start with Amy.
Oh, but Spencer looks so excited.
Oh, you can go.
Okay. I because of that little huff over there that he did, I feel like I need this to build. Oh, no, so
it's gonna be it's quick.
So for me, in the time of pandemic, I've kind of had more optimism towards anime that's coming out, as well as design, specifically because I think the frontier that is animation as well as anime in general has been changing for years. And it's only kind of starting to catch up with our eyes, if that makes sense, and how we perceive it. So as far as that goes, I'm still optimistic and hopeful for anime. And I watch some random stuff, but mostly it's about food.
Oh, there you go.
Food.
Spencer.
It's actually been a minute since I watched an anime anything, really.
As of anything new or just in general?
In general.
Wait, you watched Suzumi last month.
Yeah. Before that, I meant.
Sorry.
Okay. Like, this is kind of like, and we're getting back into
okay,
it.
Okay, Kirby, gotcha.
Yeah. Because I think, actually, it's been a year. Like,
since you've last seen any anime films?
Yeah.
Or any series?
Yeah, because we're going back to early last year. I think probably for last anime. But I didn't make it a year, so that has to count for something.
When did we see the second? Well, it probably was like a couple of years back. The second My Hero movie.
That was a couple of years ago.
That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Because I remember we discussed that with Tyler on the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
But, okay. So.
So, yeah. Feelings are kind of the same because like I have unless something's happened in the anime world recently, like I'm very unaware of it.
Have you seen anything new?
No.
Hold on. Cause I know, so you and I kind of grew up in the same kind of era. We grew up watching things like, you know, Gundam. We grew up watching.
We're all the same age.
No, but I'm saying, did you grow up watching Gundam Wing? Did you grow up watching,
I didn't really like
Dragon
Gundam
Ball?
Wing,
did
yes.
you grow up watching you grew up watching Dragon Ball?
Yeah.
And Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah.
And Dragon Ball GT?
Didn't like GT.
I didn't
or
see
Super.
It.
I didn't really watch Super.
Or
Kai.
Or
Broly.
Even things like, you know, Pokemon.
Yes.
Things like Yu-Gi-Oh.
Inuyasha. Keep going. Tell me that I don't have enough cred.
But even then, like in film as well, like with Akira, things like Ghost in the Shell, you know, movies like that, the original Battle Angel I don't know if you ever saw that movie way back.
No, I just saw the one that, the live action one.
We don't talk about
we
that.
We don't talk about that.
But it, for me, so I'm sorry. In terms of the question I was going to ask you, has your view on the way animation style, the changes in it?
Okay, well, wait. Now that we're talking about style, it's a bit different.
Well, see, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, as animation has, I have to keep rephrasing that because it's not animation. It's technically Japanese animation, right? Because animation is an American, created idea, mm-hmm. versus the Japanese animation is its own thing, which is why it's just called anime. So with your view of even art styles, going from what you were used to from younger years to where you are now, how do you feel of the trajectory of anime as a whole?
That's a bit different when we're talking about style.
Because I have things to say, and that's where my head is at when I think.
Okay. Style-wise, I'm concerned, very concerned, because like there's a proliferation of like CGI in animes, and sometimes it will blend in and it's all right. Mm-hmm. Other times it will be so apparent and it looks so ugly.
Yeah.
Like, whatever the last Dragon Ball Super movie, the superhero. That's
superhero,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is like the ugliest recent movie I've seen, and it's shocking.
And you're a big Dragon Ball fan.
Yeah. The story was funny to me, but like the animation and like very specific parts where they were leaning heavily on like computer generated graphics.
Yeah.
So dang ugly. Like there were PS2 anime games that looked better than that. Like specifically
Bring me back
Dragon
my
Quest,
polygons.
Dragon Quest 8, which was like based on Akira Toriyama's own art. Mm-hmm. So like that looked like much better than parts of that movie. And I'm like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, and that's part of my issue. Like I'm and I don't know if it just puts me into that category of like a fan of older style anime, the unrefined lines, the care for character growth and arc over like the the extreme definition of characters in the actual film or show. There are anime films and shows that are out now that are just like, they just feel so
bland
because they're over polished. Like the perfection that was put into it takes away from the artistry of the series as a whole or the film as a whole. And that's kind of my issue. Like I like things where you can tell that the work was put in by the animator by hand. You can tell that there's effort and it's not overly, you know, overly processed via the computer. You know, I mean, a great example is almost every Studio Ghibli film out there. Mm-hmm. You know, you can tell that those scenes in the film are absolute like works of art.
Question though, I haven't seen this movie, so I can't speak to it. What about that? What is it? Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
I think Amy's seen that one.
So quickly touching on this. The reason Ghibli movies are so wonderful and brilliant is because the vast majority of them rely heavily on their animation being hand-drawn, which is part of Miyazaki's, like, you come to Jesus, this is the way we do it moment, which has even been prevalent with the, I cannot remember the other director. He did My Neighbor Yamada's and The Tale of Princess Kaguya. I know Eddie will probably find it, who passed away. Wow. He had a very big predilection to do the same thing. So whenever you see his are all hand-drawn and it looks literally like you're flipping through like one of those the little flip books for animation.
They look gorgeous.
They do. When it comes to Hedwig and the Angry Inch, while the spirit is still
Isao
there,
Isao Takahata.
He was in the Kingdoms of Dream and Madness documentary, which is really cool.
Remember the one we saw at your house? We saw the documentary while we were hanging out.
But Hedwig, and it's not Hedwig and the Angry Inch, because that's a great movie, but that is not an anime.
Wow, which one?
Is it Earwig or something?
Earwig.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, wait, I don't remember what I'm thinking of.
I had to check that one for a minute, too, because I was like, wait, that's a great movie, but not the right one. Great Broadway production as well. But Earwig. That one, it came out with partnership with, I believe it was Amazon, and it is somebody took the paperwork from Miyazaki and kind of crammed it aggressively into a computer to render it. While there is still spirit there in like some of the design, it literally just looks like... Did you ever see Ruby?
No.
So Ruby is an anime that's entirely designed on computer, and I don't like it at all. Just putting that out there.
It's,
sorry,
it's
Ruby.
It's spelled
fan.
RWBY, by the way. Yeah. Not.
Oh!
Yeah, okay, that's, but it's pronounced okay. Ruby. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. This feels like it's an over-computer-generated, over-processed, like, movie.
And but see, that, but even then, in that mindset, I feel like that's the direction people are, like, pushing to take anime towards. Like, nobody is saying anything bad about it or whatnot. And I feel like because of that, everyone's like, well, it's just, it's anime, you know, it's just, it's, you know, the interpretation of blah, blah, blah. But then it's like, okay, much like AI art, at what point in time does it become no longer, you know, proprietary to the specialty individuals, specialized individuals who are creating anime and the people who can just generate it with a click of a button, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm in that vein of a mindset where it's like I just appreciate anime where it isn't too heavily focused on creating perfect corners and like exquisite facial movements, but like the backdrops, the beauty in the story, how it melds together. Like I said, like one of my favorite anime films is Castle in the Sky or Laputa. Like it's a beautiful movie, you know, both from a cinematic standpoint as well as the story. There's a lot of elements to that movie that could have been, you know, rendered through computer, could have added like CG aspects to it, but I don't really think there's much in there, and it's a beautiful story, it's a beautiful film. So why can't that be kind of like the benchmark for what's, you know, what's coming out now? Mm-hmm. So
I mean, those are great points, and I'd also like to add in that one of the problems that we don't really think about with CGI is that it takes away some limitations we had. Mm-hmm. So like when you're hand drawing something, you can't just like do all the same things that CGI does. Mm-mm. So you have to like be creative in how you showcase a thing. So like that can actually give you like a different type of feel than CGI just being like,
you're a 3D model moving through a, you know, an environment and blah, blah, blah. See, that's how we do it. Done in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's also CGI being done well. And especially we've already established that Studio Ghibli is the benchmark when it comes to utilizing CGI, especially with Miyazaki movies that are gently placed in such a way that they enhance the experience and they don't take away from it. Perfect example, the flower sequence in Spirited Away, when Chihiro is running through the flowers following
Haku.
Yeah. And the flowers are moving past her. That's all CG. Like it was initially drawn and then they use the computer to have her move and make it feel like you're going through it and flowing.
Yeah, but that's one scene as opposed to a whole movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of that is also with Howl's as well, Howl's Moving Castle.
Again, those are like one or two scenes compared to the whole movie.
And we're talking about, well, here, then let's talk about our director for this movie, Hosada, who did a good chunk of Summer Wars, like CG, when they were in Oz, which was their digital world.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
and it was... So, okay, let's jump into this movie here because I think
we have to do parallels. able to talk about it.
So, Spencer, had you seen this movie prior to recently?
No, I have not.
So, I know Amy has. So, kind of expectations are kind of, you know, not really necessary because you saw it way back when, I'm assuming.
I was a pirate.
Which we don't condone in this podcast. So
I was piratical by nature to watch something I was really excited for, and I heard great things from Cannes.
So let's do this. Okay. What were some of your expectations from what you saw out of Cannes, and in terms of like looking forward to seeing this movie?
Because Hosada had at this time already made another movie called Mirai, which I had seen, I was really excited. Considering he had done also The Girl Who Leapt Through Time and Summer Wars.
By the way, it's Hosada.
Hosada. Sorry. Sorry.
I'm like, why does that not sound right?
Because I'm wrong. I got it.
Truth.
But I had been really excited for him ever since Summer Wars, which became like my go-to anime film. If I was going to recommend one that's outside of Ghibli, that was one of the first ones I would always pull out because it's so much fun. So when I was going into this, I was just really excited because I had heard the critics were saying great things from Cannes. It wasn't going to be coming out in America until like almost a year later. I couldn't wait. Yeah, I couldn't wait. So I was just really excited and I was hopeful for some type of fairy tale with a computer twist.
What about you, Spence? Coming into this film, what were some of your expectations? Did you see any of the trailers before you saw it?
No, I actually like looked up a, I don't know how I got it. It was an article, just an article title about how this was like very Beauty and the Beast-esque. And once they said that, like every time I saw the main girl, I just kept singing that song Belle from the Disney version whenever she was walking
little
by.
Little town.
Yeah, and that's it.
There you go.
What about you, Eddie?
Honestly, at first I was excited about this movie. I thought it would look interesting. I, recognizing the director from Summer Wars and him being the person who was going to be doing this, I had some high hopes in terms of watching it and hopefully seeing a well-rounded story. Now, I have to confess, I did try to see this movie a couple months ago, and I fell asleep like 20 minutes in, 20, 25 minutes
did
in.
Did you watch it with the English cast?
It was with the English cast.
That explains a lot.
And so Amy said, she reached out, she goes, we're doing anime in May. We need to see an anime film, and Spencer already agreed to Belle. And I'm like, crap. So
well, I also said that we should watch Suzume, so but it wasn't in theaters anymore because you had seen it, and I was like, we could talk about it, and we could talk about, you know, how anime is changing. And yeah, all I heard was, oh crap.
So and then she says, but you have to see it in Japanese because the American version isn't that great.
And also, just for clarity's sake, I was stuck watching the English
version. I'm so sorry.
Because apparently you have to choose Japanese before you start watching the movie.
It's true.
I checked audio subtitle options, just so you know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So my expectation for this movie was, I'm hoping I can get through it in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's any indication as to the rest of the film being like those first 20 minutes, whether English, Japanese, Polish, Spanish, whatever it may
Italian.
Be, I was going to have a hard time if it was like that. So let's jump to after seeing the film, first impressions. Amy, since you have the oldest impression on this, more so than all of us.
The oldest?
Because I'm assuming you've seen this movie more than once.
Yes.
Because I've only seen it once, and you?
Once.
Okay, so.
Yeah, so I am the middle ground. This is awkward. The very first time I saw it from Cannes, because my piratical nature was
just
there.
Say you saw it. Stop saying you pirated it. Because
there's a difference, because when you do that,
Lord above,
like,
if we have anybody who's
you get
ever
really
considering.
Bad, like, you get really bad variations where there's somebody like, something's missing, it's been cut funny, the
yeah,
angle
but
shifts.
Here's the thing. Every time you say that and we get somebody who might be interested in letting us screen a film, they're like, oh, wait, these guys pirate movies. Never mind. I'm not going to give them anything. So thanks a lot, Amy. Go ahead.
They can give it to you, not to me. And it was only this one movie. So when I saw it, I wanted to see it again.
She goes, I saw it and realized I needed to see it again.
Yes, it was that, because there was a lot of things that I wanted to see on a bigger screen. And I wanted to be able to experience and kind of see if it was my impression, or like I liked it, or did I like it? Like, where did it this
the
fall?
What does that mean? Sometimes, did I like it or did I like it? What are you? Is this Wally? What are you trying to say? What does that mean?
Sometimes you can like something, but you don't love it. And sometimes you can love something and not like it. I like hot wings. I could eat hot wings in all its varying forms every single day for supper. That's I like hot wings.
Okay. Just keep going with your very elaborate first impression.
Thanks. I wanted to see it again. There.
So you saw it and your first impression is, I want to see it again.
Yes.
That makes no sense. Spencer.
Whatever.
Your first impression with this film.
what the heck happened with this voice cast? Oh my gosh.
Preface, you saw it in English.
English, specifically the English voice cast. This was wild. Because I'm watching the movie and then I'm very abruptly taken out of the movie by the way people are talking. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? Because I don't understand. Some of these people have been in other things. I've seen them in other things. I know they are talented people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is this just bad directing? What's interesting is that they're bad, but in the same way of being very generic with their voice. Mm-hmm.
Like a really bad voice dubbing.
But like,
not even funny though.
No, not funny. But like, they're all like they're uninterested in what is occurring around them.
Yep.
Like, oh, he got attacked. Like that. Mm-hmm. Like, but just consistently across the board. And I'm like, I don't understand how everyone is like most characters. Like, there's a few people who are able to like emote for mm-hmm. some reason, and I don't understand what's going on with them. But especially Manny Jacinto, I love you. I don't want to call you out. I know you can act, but like for some reason, for me at least, him across this movie, like with the exception of one line at the end, he is just like this cool kid who doesn't really care about anything, even though his main point is to be really protective of this girl because he cares a lot.
Oh, mm-hmm. He's the guy from The Good Place.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm like, Jason!
Because I'm looking at his filmography and I'm like, what the heck did you see him in? He's only been in four things.
It's The Good Place.
But it's The Good Place. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Because the only other thing
Bear
that he's...
Jeremy needs him.
The only other thing he was in was in a movie from last year called I Want You Back, and then he was in Top Gun Maverick.
I
haven't seen those
yet. Yeah. So I'm just really upset. And I'm also curious on how that's going to affect my experience of this movie.
Hey,
frustrated about the voice cast.
Trust me, we'll find some bridges here because, my first impression as soon as the movie was over was, what the heck was that? Like, coming at it from a story perspective, number one, I get it. We're in an age where, like, we're just rehashing the same stuff over and over. You know, we're doing live action remakes of classic films. We're doing adaptations in certain formats. We're seeing people are running out of ideas. We're running out of ideas so much that they're making a movie about elements, personifying, like humanizing elements and making them actual characters in a world where elements can talk. We're running out of ideas.
We did it with emotions.
That had human people, that had actual stories to it, which was actually a decent film.
This is coming from the same house.
There's literally Pixar. There's literally a movie. There's literally a scene in that movie where there's a fence up, and the water guy just walks through, and the flame girl, just walks through, and they're like, I don't know why they put those up. Yeah, I don't know either. And it's like, what?
It's
like,
going to be a fun review when we get to that one next month.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that one at all. It's just another Strange World type movie for me.
You didn't even watch Strange World.
Is a very different category. That was Disney specifically, and it felt like Disney specifically.
Well, I mean, who's pulling the strings on Pixar? Thank you.
I was like, Bird? Is it still Red Bird?
It's Disney. Yeah. Disney is still, you know, you go to Disneyland or California Adventure. What do you like? Do you buy just Disney things or is there Pixar things there as well to buy?
I don't get to buy Pixar things.
Here's what I'm
going to
say. If Elemental is like Strange World, then I will believe that Disney is actively sabotaging
that's
Pixar.
Actually good.
That's what I'll say.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised they haven't made the announcement yet that it's going to be in a Disney Plus exclusive and it's not going to be in theaters. So.
Or it's immediately going like that next week and you can watch it on Disney Plus. I would not be surprised about that either.
So anyway, back to my thoughts. This movie is so freaking slow and the story is so pedantic. I don't know why it's got the ratings that it does on Rotten Tomatoes. It has a 95% critic score, and it has a 95% audience score.
That's the Japanese version.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because like
I don't know. I didn't look deep into the weeds of like what who's saying what or what did they see or like which variation of, you know, the dubbing that they watched. But I'm like, this story is just so bland, and it just, and on top of it, the art of it all is just so distracting and so too polished for me. Like, I can't deal with that.
I want to clarify that. Are you talking about the whole thing or just like the you digital world environments?
Technically, actually, everything, because there were even there were even certain scenes. Well, you know what? Mostly the you part, because there were certain scenes in the real world that looked good, kind of reminded me of like older style Satoshi Kon.
Yeah, no, I got that vibe in the real world of this movie, and I was like, I like this.
Yeah, I felt like the real world could have like transitioned into like Perfect Blue or Paprika or something. Like it would have made.
Left your time.
Yeah,
it's the it runs in the same kind of art style.
It does. Yeah.
But I just, it was over, number one, it was overstimulating, which anime doesn't necessarily, even as active as it can be, doesn't necessarily usually do that for me. And secondly, as overstimulating as it was, it still seemed distracting from the already tough to follow story that I was really just super disinterested in. And everything, like this movie was, I believe, 2 hours long. It could have been done in like half that time, but we'll talk about it as we dive in. So let's go ahead and jump into the review and let's talk about the performers. Now, I know you have issues with the English cast, so why don't you explain a little bit more on what your issues are? Because I do know one of my biggest issues that I had was hearing the Deep's voice in Justin, the main guy, the main dude with the lion's hand or whatever.
The Justice Vigilante guy.
Oh.
That was the Justin. Deep from the boys.
Full Gaston.
Okay. Yes. I caught on he was full Gaston.
This movie, oh my God. We're not talking about that yet. Just talking about actors, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's mostly just everyone being flat is my main problem, specifically with the English one. I didn't see any of the others, so I don't know how they like compare or contrast. I feel like, Amy, you'd be the only one who'd be able to really speak to that. But yeah, coming.
I'm sorry.
Talking about like the main character. Oh gosh, I'm trying not to slam people. I don't believe in like, you know, just like that.
Come on,
like,
and slam and welcome to the gym.
did you really just?
Yes, she did.
It's for his jam. Okay.
Okay. How do I say this?
As plainly as possible.
She, in like a lot of her scenes, like I feel like she just woke up. Like she had like this like, oh right, I'm in the middle of a job type thing for me. And that was kind of like, I feel like that was a problem with the immersion of this movie, is that like the voice cast, you really need them to like be there and be like present in the scenes.
Yeah.
And it kind of just felt like, well, it's a paycheck, kind of like a Flintstones character. And I feel like that's my overall problem, is that like these things are happening and it's like, so what? Like, so, and that's
so what?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how it feels like for the most part. Like, I feel like the people who came up the best in this movie are that popular girl and that guy she has a crush on, because like they were
Ruka.
Yeah, they were like the most interesting, which is not great when they're very, very hard side characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And like over there.
Yeah. I do have to admit, I did appreciate the canoe guy.
Oh yeah, I love the canoe guy.
Do you remember what his name was?
Kamishin?
Yeah, Kamishin.
He's Kami something, but he had his giant like canoe and his flag, and he's like, go with my
canoe.
He had all the energy you need for your life.
Yeah. And mind you, like he was interesting in this one. I liked kind of the way his story arc and as well as Ruka's story arc kind of progressed.
Mind you, saw it in the Japanese version too.
See, here's the thing. Japanese voice actors, they tend to have a lot of energy. They tend to have a lot of like really like pent up sounds where, you know, the intonations go up here and go down, then they go back up here, and you know, there were so many pauses and so many moments in this film that just felt like the sound booth must have been super quiet for them to make these pauses, or if maybe like someone who was editing was like, all right, they're doing the line. I'm going to cut it right here. I'm going to give it about 5 seconds of just pure silence. And then we'll recut here. And it's like, why? Like, I get it. You're going for like dramatic effect, but it's starting to get a little ridiculous at this point. Mm-hmm. But I did appreciate like some of his performance in the film. I liked the way that whole thing wrapped up. And I liked the way the voice actor really kind of kept the energy for it. I can't really think of anyone else. Amy, you take over from here, because I'm like, I'm...
Who do you like? Let's start with that.
So, of the two, I need to just specify, I really like the Japanese voice acting much more than I do the English. Not digging on the fact that the English voice actress and singing actress for Belle was an unknown, no joke, teenager that they found in New York.
Are we talking about the Japanese?
The English version.
She's the one who did the singing?
She did singing and the speaking voice, yeah.
For the English?
Yes, just for English stuff.
Okay.
And she, like, Spencer, that's her. I'm showing Spencer a picture of the actress. But it's like, she has a variety that she was a breakout and debut voice acting in Belle could pave the way for anonymous teenage talent to be discovered type of thing.
I feel like we're ahead of ourselves a bit.
Yeah, just a smidge. So while and a lot of the English cast, as Spencer stated, except for one or two very excitable people who have been doing voice acting for a while, they're very monotone. They're very flat. There's no tension. There's no gravitas. There's nothing. When you flip to the Japanese side, you get depth of sound for everybody. Also, for me, I did. I mean, the one person I can say across the board that is fairly similar, except a little more hyped on the Japanese voice acting versus the English, is going to be her best friend, Hiro, who's the one that's like, ha ha ha, I'm the producer and the manager. And she's like, kind of crazy. That translates really well for both sides. There's just a lot more yelling in Japanese.
I kind of feel like she should have been yelling a little bit more.
Yeah, but she doesn't. And she's just kind of like, meh. which makes me sad. And then another one that I actually really liked was, there's not a lot of people that are in this movie. And then when they are, you're like, yes, we want to talk about the person that played Suzu. And she was so wonderful. And she's an introvert, but it feels more natural in the Japanese than it does in English. I want to give like the arrangement also for the words and all the songs sounds a lot better in Japanese than it does in English. So, yeah. But I do really like the canoe guy and Ruka, because even in English or Japanese, they're very entertaining.
I felt like Shinobu was cookie cutter from every other anime that has that quiet, cool guy who...
I'm here to protect you.
Like, it seemed... Unfortunately, I felt like that the actor for that one just kind of was stuck with what he was given. He's like, yeah, we want you to be like, you know, be like every other cool guy from an anime, you know, just be have a soft voice like this and say, I'm here to protect you.
Huh. Like, because that's interesting, because that's also how I describe the English Manny Jacinto for that. And I'm wondering if someone's like, yeah, copy what the Japanese guy did or something. There's a story here. I know it.
You're about to get to the bottom of it. You're like, archetyped. I will find you. I mean, I think that's also kind of across anime. There's always the quiet brooding guy that's like, I'm so cool and I'm here for this and I'm here to support you.
Yeah, but the problem is like, at least in the English version, is that like when you're playing it the way he was, which was like hard cool, like a parody version would make more sense of like, oh, I'm always cool, like you're on fire but you're still cool type thing.
Yeah.
But like it doesn't work here because like he's supposed to be a normal kid and like when he pivots to like he's happy, it's off-putting.
You're like, you're not allowed to be cool and happy.
Yeah.
Like, we have this. The canoe guy is cool and happy and weird. Like, that's his thing. You're not allowed to be cool and happy.
It's interesting how, like, a lot of a lot of the performances, because it's not physically, like, there's not a physical demand for a lot of these people to show up, like, on a soundstage and perform. So it's a lot of their voice acting. And unfortunately, I do feel like a lot of the American voice actors do take their kind of beats from the Japanese voice actors. But that also goes towards, like, the storytelling, the way the story was told and the way it's, like, it comes out. And a lot of the movie just really missed a lot of great opportunities to tighten up and to be better told in terms of the overall story than what was given. Like, I honestly do feel like, in terms of the story, I do feel like this movie had potential. I'll give it that much. It had potential to be something better, but I feel like it just strongly clung, like, to the whole Beauty and the Beast mentality mixed with, like, American Idol. Like, it had that very strong, like, oh, this has been done before. We've seen this before. This isn't anything new. And not literally do anything new, you know. I all the way to, like, literally reenacting some of the scenes from, like, Beauty and the Beast, where he's literally on the floor of his balcony that looks like it was taken from the Beauty and the Beast movie, and, like, wrapped in his cloak. The only thing different was that they gave him splotches on his back and things like that. Like, I don't know. Like, I felt like if you're going to create an anime, and specifically with the type of demand, if you will, from anime fans worldwide, mm-hmm. and you decide, I'm going to create a virtual reality variation of Beauty and the Beast, you would think you would change a few beats to keep it from being bland. It would keep it interesting.
Yes.
you would think. But this movie moves so slow, both in the virtual world as well as the real world of this film. And I feel like everything takes so long. It's like watching episodes of Dragon Ball Z. It's like
that's a bad analogy.
No, we're six episodes in on the fight sequence, and we're just starting to get the power up. And then it's the announcer's voice over the end. No, that's so mean.
I was literally 25, maybe 30 minutes in, yeah. And I'm like, no. I'm sorry. I was about 45 minutes or 50 minutes in the movie. And I was like, I didn't realize at the time, and I paused it, and I'm like, we're barely at this point in the movie. Everything, all this stuff for the last almost hour should have been established in, like, the first 20 minutes. Why are we barely here?
And I'd like to also point out that if you're watching a movie and you pause it and you have the thought of how can there be this much more left,
mm-hmm.
you're in a bad place already.
I did that twice.
I got to the hour and 30 minute mark and I paused it. I'm like, there's 30 minutes more? What? We're wrapping it up right now.
Should be wrapping it up.
What could there be?
Yeah, this movie just was, I mean, the story was so slow. And honestly, that also goes towards, like, the comparison to Summer Wars. You take Summer Wars. Now, Spencer, have you seen Summer Wars?
Yes, okay. We watched it.
Because I was like, you need to see this movie.
It's great.
So in the efforts of Summer Wars, there is consistent movement. There's multiple plot points, much like this movie. There's multiple plot points. But this movie, because of the pacing and because of, like, the immediacy and the sense of urgency that it carries, it pushes the story forward even without missing all the emotional beats, which is what you want. You know, with Summer Wars, you have, like, the situation with the grandma, the family gathering, the virtual world of Oz, the guy who's still technically working, but he's not, comes to find out, like, this code is going to, you know, destroy whatever. Like, a lot of things are happening, and you have this sense of urgency that is just happening throughout the film, this sense of urgency that is pushing the story forward. And I literally got to, like, the hour and 30 mark, and I'm like, somebody just send a missile somewhere, like in Summer Wars, just do an all-out strike so that we can speed this thing up. Like, say, you know, Belle's going to sing, and if she stops singing, the world's going to end in, like, nuclear cataclysm. I don't know. But, like, there was no sense of, like, and I get it. I know there's going to be people like, oh, but she was healing. She was learning to love herself, this and that. She could have done that, like, 30 minutes earlier. Like, I feel like the last 30 minutes of this film seemed like a tack on. Like it was just an added last minute, like, oh, you know what we could do? We could do this and then like do this and that, and then speed it through this and that. And I'm like, it felt disjointed. The last part of this film felt very disjointed from the rest of the story, and it kind of took a left turn into really, really dark territory.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is about child abuse. Got it. Okay. But it's like, how does that fit in with the story for Suzu in terms of, like, there's so many disconnects that happen throughout the story that I'm like, if I don't want to, but if I were to watch this movie again, I would literally be looking for like those fracture points in the middle or like towards the tail end of the film that would indicate they were running out of juice at this point. Like, I don't know. What do you think, Amy? Because you're looking at me weird. And
I'm not looking at you weird, like in the sense of you're wrong. Okay. I'm not going to start with that, even though I would like to. Things to point out. The person that wrote Summer Wars was not Hosoda. It was somebody else.
Then he should have got them back.
Which creates that pacing that was necessary. The story was concise. It was tight. It did great. The other thing that in an otaku article, and mind you, there's like three or four otaku articles that came out about this movie. One of the very first ones they talk about is that Hosoda was...
It was co-written by Hosoda. Mm. Summer Wars.
Okay. Well, somebody helped doctor that and tweaked it where it needed to go. Let's be honest.
They should have brought that person back.
But so they said, he had said that he wanted to create a musical following the beats of the original Beauty and the Beast by Disney, because he had been working initially as an animator. And when he saw Beauty and the Beast in the theaters when it originally released, it inspired him and kept him going towards animation.
Okay.
So there's that.
Time out. It didn't inspire him. He plagiarized that entire movie. Let's just be frank. Let's call a spade for a spade.
He brought in an animator that worked on the original Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, well, now Jin Kim. Like, he was trying to copy.
Yes. which there's that. He also establishes that Japanese culture is not known for making musical movies, so this was going to be more difficult because he got pushback from the studio that was like, we don't want to make this. We don't want to make this as a musical. You need to figure this out.
Interesting.
Probably would have, like, taking the story that this film hits, I don't know if the music portion is a big strong point for it, because the musical points in this film,
they're nice, but they could have been cut down.
I mean, they could have easily just been part of the soundtrack. Like, they could have been background music. Like, there's this scene where Belle, apparently, or Suzu, has just written a love song or whatever. And there's a scene where they're in on the balcony or whatever, and that whole remaking of him writhing in pain or whatever. And then it automatically transitions where she's singing the song in like the foyer of the castle, and then things start changing. And it's like, first off, how did you get down there? And secondly, as she's singing, the area that they're in starts to reshape and form into a ballroom, which looks exactly like the one from Beauty and the Beast.
100%.
I'm like,
I think it looked a little cooler, except for the ceiling did not look
just
as cool.
Like it. And then they shoot off like a star. Like, what is this crap? Like, I'm watching this. I'm like, that better not be them. And then it does a zoom in. I'm like, oh, they're, you know, oh. And then there's just so many questions about the choice of story direction. And if it had to be like tied so strongly to the music aspect, I would have listened to the people who said, don't do it and not do it. Because honestly, her being a singer didn't really do much for me. The musical part of this whole film didn't do anything for me. They're beautiful songs. I give them that.
Even the big, like, the final one that changes the world, quote unquote.
A speech can do that.
Does it change? I mean,
well, for her in that moment, I think that's what they're trying to imply, like, that it does.
Like, they show the characters, like, showing tears, like, oh, like, making all the, you know, all that, whatever they do in the anime. And it's like, she's just singing, like, I don't get
I cry at people singing. You but like you can, to harass you can, me with people singing.
You can you could do the same effect with a speech, or like the, you take major beats from most films that utilize those climactic moments. Songs. I mean, are we watching Evita? Is this Beauty and the Beast and Evita? Is,
it could be.
You know, I wish this movie had a more cohesive way to tell this story. And I feel like utilizing the music aspect and her singing aspect, like, where does that connect to anything? I mean, what was her draw for music in the first place?
Her mom.
So her mom sang?
Yeah.
Because I know that
and
she...
And her mom taught her, which was part of that initial, like, 20
I know her
minutes.
Dad taught her.
No, that was her mom.
That was her mom, yeah.
It just, it
and
seemed...
her mom
see,
died,
here's the thing.
So she essentially here's lost her voice and her
I
passion.
Was,
and...
I was paying attention to this film. That was super... like very minimal in terms of conveying that, because they show that scene and then her mom dies.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, so they sat together one time at a piano and now.
Well, it was a time lapse. So it gave you the impression that this happened multiple
times.
Yeah.
And in that time lapse, she's on her phone playing the piano.
Yeah.
She's not with anybody.
Because she's learning.
So she didn't learn from her mom.
Yeah, she partnered with her mom so that she could learn, and
but
then she
could
practice on her own while her
mom
was still
alive.
If they
wanted to create that stronger connection, they should have used more time to build that instead of, like, I get it, the mother-daughter aspect, the dynamic between that. But honestly, that went way too fast for me in terms of the connection between her and her mom. That storyline, that bit of exposition is very minimal. And then everything else after the fact, like, half of the times where she pauses or she's turning red or she's not able to speak, you could have used that time to build more of that parent-child dynamic. But it felt very slim on that part.
You know, what they could have done instead was just start the movie when she's a kid and, like, show you all that stuff, like, not make its flashbacks spread throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And just start at the beginning of, like, yeah, you know, she was closer than the mom. They did music stuff. She died. She lost her voice. And then just hop to, like...
Thank you. I was saying all that could have been done in the first 20, 30 minutes. And you're 50 minutes in and you're like, oh. Oh, why didn't they do this already before? Like, you're at a point where it's like, so okay. All right. I don't... This movie moved way too slow for what it was trying to do. It carried way too much in the element of, you know, building her persona and her crazy manager friend, and didn't put enough effort into actually fleshing out what the heart of this story is. And the closest we get to it is this disconnected song that she does at the tail end of the film that is supposed to move the world, supposedly. And I'm like, she's saying one song that gets remixed multiple times into different variations, and then she sings that song at the end. And I'm like, she's a two-hit wonder, okay, but it didn't do anything for me. There was no connection for me. I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're looking at me like I'm like, oh, he's hurting my movie. Like, what do you think? What is your thoughts on, in all honesty, how do you see the trajectory of this story in terms of it connecting? So you say when you want to show people or recommend to people a great anime film outside of, like, the norms,
mm-hmm.
you recommend Summer Wars.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's something that regardless of how many times I rewatch it, it's still an enjoyable effort.
Why? Yeah, like what?
Literally, because I can rewatch it and it doesn't grow bored or stale to me. I also have kind of figured out that you are super duper picky about a lot of things. So if I'm going to recommend
because
something,
because I like nice
you-
things, as Anton Ego says, I don't like food. I love it. If I don't love it, I don't swallow. For God's sakes, this movie is not consumable in a single sitting because you have to sit there and then ponder your life after about 30, 40 minutes. Spencer, you okay?
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking.
he's like, it's true.
A little bit true.
it's look, when it comes to anime holds a special place in my heart, as well the rest of us here at the table.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just consume it willy-nilly for the fact that, oh, it's a Japanese animated film, I'm gonna watch it, or this is a Japanese animated series, I'm gonna watch it. Like, I watch things that remind me of why I like and I love anime. And as of late, like the animation art style has gone the way of the dodo, to be quite frank. Most of it, it is very sad, and it's very slim pickings as to what shows and what films are palatable to my liking. And there's not a problem with me having a preference, because you know what? That's just the way I am. I get to have an opinion. And it's looking at people who just consume it on a mass scale, and they're like, oh, I'm an anime fan. I watch this. And like, okay, if the depths of your animation, like, filmography, you know, viewing history is based off of Netflix, I'm sorry, but you are pretty much a noob in every aspect, as anybody can tell, and your ability to tell me the difference between, and I'm not saying this about Amy, I'm just so
you're
people know.
You're gesturing towards me and nobody can see you, so that is your one gimme, is literally that nobody can see you. Mind you, there is an empty seat between Spencer and myself. Direct that, forward and stop why, angling to the right.
Okay, but I'm saying in general for people who are like, oh, you know, I watch Demon Hunter, I watch, you know, this is, I watch Castlevania, blah, blah, blah. Like, all these are on Netflix, I get it, that's fine, but just because you've only seen these in the last 6-7 years and that you think that makes you like a expert on good anime, I'm sorry, but that doesn't do it for me. Like, if you have never had a Funimation account or a Crunchyroll account, or you've never stayed up late to watch Toonami, or if you've never had an opportunity to watch any of the great classics or even the more modern stories that are out there, like such as like I agree with Amy on, you know, things like My Hero. My Hero is a great anime. I feel like the story really does the manga justice, and I love following it. You know, things like, as of late, Princess Jellyfish is a great anime series.
That is the way of the dodo, because that was a very 2015, 2016.
And yeah, as of the being one of the more recent ones, the art style is very reminiscent of, like, older type anime. It carries a lot of heart to it. There's passion behind it. And I don't even know if they made a season two.
No, they didn't. So, they made a live action
remake of it. Don't tell me that.
Don't worry. I won't show you where that is.
But things like that, there's an immediate connection. There's an immediate like zooming in, tunnel vision for like certain types of anime that are out there that you know. Like, when you watch it instantly, like you said with Summer Wars, you start it and you're like, boom, you're in it, because the story still engages you. This movie felt like someone tried to go to the nth degree and then literally did way much more than needed and ultimately created, tossed out the whole mentality of less is more and just went crazy and tried to recreate a story that did, you know, justice to the time during the Disney Renaissance era. But now it's like, I don't want a Beauty and the Beast story. I want an original tale. I don't want, you know, American Idol in anime. I want a great story. I don't want to spend so much time looking at character arcs that are literally mirroring other animes out there. You know, with the only thing this movie was missing was the blood nosebleed. That's it. That's the only thing this thing was missing.
Was a space for it too when the canoe guy and Ruka were in the train station. Am I right, Spencer? There could have been a perfect, just a little dribbly nosebleed, and it would have been 100% on point.
On brand for the new guy.
Yeah, heck yes. It was cute.
But I mean, that's where I feel like there's a lot of people out there who are looking at Belle and they're like, oh, this is a great introduction to anime, blah, 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 this, and that. And
who's saying this is an introduction to anime?
I've been looking at other people's reviews, and there are some people that are like, oh, Belle is a great movie. If you're looking for a great way to jump into anime, you should watch it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this should not be your first step. This should be your 100th step. Yeah. There are so many other things you can see prior to this, and I get it. People like the amount of emotionality in this movie and the amount that they can be comfortable with pertaining to stories that they're familiar with, and even the aspects of like the beautiful singing. But the problem is that your frame of reference is so narrow that you don't have anything to base it off. And so if you're looking at this and you're like, oh, this is a great anime movie, compared to what? You know? Yeah. That's my issue, is like, I get it. If this movie had came out and it was like some kind of low level studio, somebody who didn't have a Summer Wars that came out, something that I could use as a frame of reference to say, hey, this guy did really great on that. I want to see what he does to follow up with. Because you, as you said in that Kotaku article. Yeah. This is technically...
Yeah, he stated himself that this is the sequel to Summer Wars.
Which is an insane thing to say.
Yeah, and that it came out of his mouth is the thing that was like, oh, that's...
I don't know if you want to hang your head on that one.
That's big praise, because considering that, like I said, he did like the Digimon movies that came out, and then that in turn inspired Summer Wars. And then, or The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, and then Summer Wars, which Girl Who Leapt Through Time, I was like, eh, it's okay. It's not bad. Okay. And then you saw Summer Wars, and I was like, okay, this is awesome. And then he had Wolf Children, which I haven't seen, The Boy and the Beast, which I know Junior Film Philosopher Sarah is like up in arms because it's one of her favorites. Mirai, which is amazing. And he got nominated for an Academy Award for Mirai. So that should tell you something. And then this, but claiming and hanging your hat that this is the sequel to Summer Wars was pretty aggressive, even for me, by my standards.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, what do you think, Spencer, about just everything I just said? Because I can't even go back to think what I, what points I hit.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right on a lot of it. Like, it doesn't need to be this long.
No.
Like, just to start off the bat. And a shorter runtime would really help with, like, the slower bits of the movie, because like then you have to like be a lot leaner, and then you know that's just will be slightly more engaging.
Yeah.
The music, you know, I could do without it. Like, you know, like I could do without it,
because that's a very Disney thing to do. Like, yeah. Disney, and this is a, you know, from your own personal experience, Disney inserts like songs and music throughout their films, and it kind of, unless it's done well, it kind of stops the momentum of the film. And for you, as you stated, it had put you out of the film.
Well, strictly with Disney specific movies, like, they have a tendency of their music being I mean, you can just check out for most of the songs and you'll be fine.
Only most of the
there's only a few
we don't talk about Bruno.
Like, yeah, but that there, there's a few. but in this movie, I mean, yeah, like, you get like the gist of it in like the first couple seconds. Like, oh, it's a love song. Got it. Oh, this is the introduction to Belle. Got it. Like, okay, this is her finale. Got it. Like once she's like done those like first little bits, like, I kind of get where she's going with it. Also, like, was it confusing to you two, the opening of this movie, where there was an explanation of like, welcome to you.
It was a callback to Summer Wars.
Like, was it that confusing in Summer Wars? Because here's, I was like, here's wait.
Here's- so, yeah, no, I got to say this because this is the part that I was like, when they did it. So in Summer Wars, it's a bunny rabbit in a cowboy hat. And they're like, welcome to Oz. In this reality, you can be whoever you want to be, which is how they started out Summer Wars. But they built it into these cuts and this really like quick music where it was showing the main characters and then it was showing something else and then it was doing all, like it was doing it all at once. Mm. So this literally, no joke, the character who is a girl in a cowboy hat with bunny ears where it's like, welcome to you, you can be whoever you want. I was just like, okay, you're doing the Summer Wars open.
But here's the thing though, unless you've seen Summer Wars, right over your head, because I was like, what the heck is going on with these whales? Why is she riding a whale at the beginning?
Why are there speaker whales?
Why are there speaker? And I was like, and at the end as well, when she apparently regains her avatar and she's riding the whales off into the distance, and I'm like, what the heck? How does this? What? And so I'm texting Amy, and I'm like, what the heck do whales have to do with this movie? And she goes, do you remember in Summer Wars? I'm like, God dang it. Here's the thing: I shouldn't have to have a prerequisite for this movie to be able to understand the climactic like victory of our main character in this film. Apparently the whales are guardians in Oz in Summer Wars,
which they explain that in Summer Wars.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying in Belle, how do you know that? How are you supposed to?
They vaguely these whales allude to the five voices that are the sages of this, which if
wait,
we're
when
in that giant open where they're like, you welcome to you, we're guided by, or blah, 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 the five voices that are our council. And then weird Gaston ripoff guy also brings it up that he has the power. When he's like, I have the power to unveil people. Okay. But it's really like, it's not well explained at all. So you pretty much think that like she borderline hired a taxi creeper, service like, of I whale.
I have the power to pull back the curtain.
No, see, here's the problem. You is Twitter. Like, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible place to be.
Oh, yeah.
And I, because, like, basically there's no police in you. It's just lawlessness. And some vigilantes have guns, but everyone else doesn't. And I'm like, like, just for a world-building perspective, I'm like, that seems bad.
And plus, I mean, if you're going to, here's the problem. If you're going to pull, like, arcs or character story arcs from other movies, don't do it from your own movies. Like the whole the beast who has gone and fought in all these fights, much like the little boy that was in Summer Wars.
Yeah, I'm
like,
that was the rabbit.
Why do we need to know this? Why is, because he's not fighting, you know, in tournaments or anything that we know of. He's just this.
Oh yeah, he is. In Summer Wars, he's fighting in tournaments.
I'm talking about in this. We're talking about Belle. We're talking about Belle in this movie.
You did clarify. You said the bunny.
So in this one, it's like, why is that important? He fought 300 and something times, and he, you know, lost twice and something in a third one or whatever.
That wasn't like in some like tournaments?
I thought it was in tournaments because they kept saying he was fighting in the tournaments and breaking down the data.
No, he would go to digital, dojos or digital whatevers, and he would challenge people. That's what they said in the report. Do you guys not remember the report?
I assume that like...
It was the same kind of
contest. Because there were times where he would flee or he was distracted and whatever. Like, you can't, like, if you're going to enter into a tournament, you're not, I mean, does that not make sense to you? Like,
I don't play online.
Well, neither apparently does the director of this movie. So it's like, I struggled with this movie so much that as soon as the credits hit, I don't know if there was an end credit scene or whatever. I literally closed it down. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I did my good deed for today. Yeah.
Spencer's like,
No, I'm like, when did I close it up?
See, you probably don't. You probably stopped it when the whales came through, and you're like, okay, cool, that's good.
The whales, yeah. And then there was a search, and then we stopped.
You didn't see the child abuse scene?
No, the search for the kid.
For the children.
Yes.
That whole plot reveal was really
heavy-handed
and heavy-handed, like extremely. I don't know. Let's talk about highlights and issues. Did anybody have anything that they wanted to highlight or had a further issue with? Amy?
I like that you both just looked at me.
For the highlights.
The art design in this, when it came to the AI CGI kind of space, was cool to see. I liked when initially Belle shows up and she's singing and it's got the weird kind of like the words are spinning around her in the different languages. I really liked that. And hilariously enough, I really liked the speaker whales.
I feel like she's just saying that to get us upset.
Speaker whales.
Spencer.
Well,
whale.
Let's see. Things I liked. I liked, oh yeah, Canoe Guy and what was her name?
Ruka.
Popular girl. Popular girl and Canoe Guy.
Remembering people's names in this movie for some reason.
Because it was forgettable.
I liked those two a lot. I liked how when text bubbles were happening in you, they were in different languages. I thought that was cool.
Which was done in Summer Wars.
And then we get into the negatives of the voice cast.
In English.
In English specifically. And then also just like mild confusion about how you works.
Because the technology of it?
No, like that's a different beast. Touch that because
I had so many questions on that one too.
Yeah, because like I thought, like, based on what they were saying in the VO, is that, like, it redirects, like, your movement in the real world.
And to your eyes and your senses. Yeah.
And so, like, if you're in you, I thought you couldn't be moving in the real world. Yeah. But, like, apparently you can. That sounds confusing as all get out. I'm controlling two spaces. But ignoring that, the thing that was confusing for me was just, like, what people in this universe were expecting and how I was supposed to know what they were expecting. For instance, Belle is apparently in a bad part of you, and like the vigilante people are like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, is she not allowed to be here?
It's the abandoned parts of the internet.
Which
was like,
she went to the dark web, I guess.
Like, that's the thing that, like, they don't really make it, like, it's not really populated, and it's kind of like on the outlying. And so even I was like, is this the sketchy bit of the internet? Is that what she's saying? Like, that's where she hangs out?
It doesn't make any sense. Like, how do you get to the sketchy part of the internet when it's managed by the whales? Like, like, how is that supposed to be? I don't know. Like, the whole search for his castle seemed really ridiculous for me.
So how the hell did he afford a castle?
True.
Yeah. He stumbled upon it.
Yeah, it was like the AIs that are in you are just like, here's a castle.
Well, remember, they're so, and that's something I do have an issue with, the weird little AIs in the dragon or the beast castle that are like, I'll tell you where it is, but it's a secret only for you. And they look like random little slugs or snails, and they've got girl faces, and they're all cutesy, and there's like 8 or 9 of them. And they're just like, oh, it's master.
I had no,
like, even I was like, oh.
I was like, what are these?
I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm like, do they not? Does nobody know that this child is what's managing this beast account? Why are there very flirtatious AIs chasing after him? Like, I don't. Yeah. That part didn't make any sense to me, and the rest of the movie didn't either. But still, like, there were parts of this movie that was like, that doesn't work. Yeah, I don't like that. I felt like there were so many elements to this movie, to this world building type thing, because I don't even know if I want to call it like I don't even know what to call it. This virtual reality system. The technology was just beyond ridiculous because it didn't make sense. The world itself was completely nonsensical. If these people were given all this power to go and kind of police the you or you, whatever it's called, wouldn't they have been given access to things like that part of you? Because it's all part of you.
Yeah, like, to be perfectly honest, like, there's this whole hunt for the beast. Who is the beast? Unveil the beast. This is a private company from the sounds of it. So, yeah. Like, just look up their account.
Yeah.
Like, at a certain point,
the you company can literally should have been use like, IP data information, geolocating. Like, how difficult is that?
Yeah, like unless the beast is a super hacker, like, you should know who he is very easily. Especially when you're getting people's
biometrics.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know why.
I got you, like, buddy. It's okay.
Like, if you're getting people's biometric information and data, why can't you just locate their IP and find out where they live? And then be like, excuse me, we're here to serve you a summons. We need you to stop doing this in our, you know, virtual reality world.
See, and that's where we get into different animes where we want to talk about people being policed and murdered. So many good animes about people being sucked into virtual reality and not being able to get out of there.
I'm pretty sure those are a lot better anime films than this one.
They're not even films. I
do have a roundtable question for the table. So, don't look in there because I didn't write it. But so apparently this movie relies heavily on the Disney adaptation of Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Glenn Keane.
What is a classic tale that you would like to see revitalized and put in a modern setting through the lens of anime?
Oh, no.
I don't know if I.
That's a hard one. That.
Well, that's literally what we just saw. So.
I know. And this is a strong case for not doing this.
Yeah.
Well, and it's even taking Western tales and like spinning it that way, because there are some beautiful stories that are specific to Asian culture, Japan in particular, that anime is based on, that are just lovely as they are. Mm-hmm. And Beauty and the Beast is an adaptation of an 18th century fairy tale from France. So even then, us Americans straight up jacked it.
Yeah. Like, that's what we do.
We have no culture of our own. We are uncultured swine.
We are.
So that's like, that is a loaded pistol with an answer that I don't even think I have.
And shoot. Go ahead.
I don't have an answer.
Well, that's the table for the question. That's the question for the table. See, this movie has me all kinds of discombobulated.
See, we tabled that question and questioned that table. I don't even... I'm talking to fill space, so hopefully Spencer comes up with something.
Honestly, my answer is no. Like, I don't feel like you should. And I feel like the main reason is this movie. Like, I feel like it makes a strong evidence for, like, you know, not just copying Disney's homework. Because especially in this time where Disney's already copying their homework.
Very true.
So, like, it's super redundant. Like, too much Beauty and the Beast. We don't need... like this many movies that are basically telling the same story.
Yeah. Amy?
I'm with Spencer, to be very honest. Like, I can't even think of something that I would want to see, whether it's the art style or otherwise, because Japanese animation and anime as a whole has defined itself by being different, bringing original stories that not only pull on our heartstrings, but make us think about things. And it would be a disservice to take a page out of American animation.
But they did.
But I will at least say this. Since this is a rehash of Beauty and the Beast, I at least saw this rehash of Beauty and the Beast and would not protest it like I did the actual Disney rehash of Beauty and the Beast.
Really?
No, I would not watch that movie. I'm not watching any of the live action movies. None. Oh, I saw Jungle Book, but that was because I got... there's a reason.
You got strong-armed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is better.
Yeah, as much as I would probably try to find an answer for the sake of just being entertaining, I am in the same boat in terms of how much this movie kind of turned me off of seeing these types of films adapted in such a way that I would have to agree that they probably should focus on... because, I mean, there's a huge pool of resources to draw from in the Japanese culture, in the Asian culture as a whole. You know, there's a ton of stories. There's a lot of folklore. You know, if you're gonna create something that is reminiscent of something that we've seen before, make sure there's enough time before the last one to give people like the amount of breathing space to be like, oh, I haven't seen that story done in a while. And there's a ton of stories that are now in public domain that you can absolutely, you know, have a hand in, you know, with what Disney's done. I mean, which is probably why they're making all the money that they do. So I think if anime were to adapt any type of story, I really think they should steer closer to things that resonate with the community for anime and the community for fans of, you know, the Japanese art style and so forth.
And
so,
that's not saying that you're incapable of doing this. Any anime directors that you are incapable of taking something from another country and making it your own. We're just saying we like seeing you being original and we don't have a problem if you're inspired by something. Just don't take from the Americans. We're weird and not in the good way.
We're
sometimes
struggling in our cinema. I don't know if you guys know this, but we're struggling for our own ideas. We're literally rehashing old stories just to make a buck. And Fast and the Furious is on their 10th film right now. So 11th film. So that should tell you something about what we do.
Yes, yeah. It's gotten this far.
So wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, talk about if the film passes or fails, and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
I saw that coming a million miles away. So this was a recommendation for me, if you couldn't get that. So for me, on the technicality of there being a story, even though it might be slow in parts, it does pass. But while everybody else is going to disparage this movie wholeheartedly because they don't want to see it again, I actually don't mind it as long as I'm in the headspace to go forward. Mm-hmm. So
take a nap is what she's saying.
Sometimes you need to get up in the middle of your movie and eat a snack. There are things that I liked about this movie, especially in Japanese and not the English dub. I'm so sorry, Spencer. I'm so sorry forever. I will apologize. But while this is a great effort on the part of Hosoda to have a some type of sequel to Some Wars. It's not the one we need, and it's definitely not the one we expected or wanted.
Are you doing a Dark Knight?
With all that being said, less music for this bell, a 3 out of 5 monocles.
Spencer.
Okay, so this movie does pass. It does have a story. I just wish the pacing was better. That's what I'll say about that. But yeah, okay. Like, when let me preface my rating this time, because I have to be very clear. I saw the English version, so that really is gonna, like, it drives down the score, like, this for me, because, like, it was
bad.
It was a watch, okay? So if you see it in Japanese, you're probably gonna come with a very slightly different, like, feeling than I did. So for me, I'm gonna give this a 2, mostly because, like, I just felt like all the parts of this movie didn't work terribly well. When I am really excited about side characters who are barely in the movie, mm-hmm. that's not a good sign, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Forget the Beast and Belle. I want to see those two guys, the two people, the one with the canoe and the one that plays the saxophone.
If there was a sequel to this movie about those two, and if they could make their relationship work, I'd be kind of like tempted, to be perfectly honest. I'd be tempted to see that.
Yeah. So in terms of does it pass or fail, this movie fails for me. This does not create a cohesive story that keeps me engaged. I felt like though it does resolve in some form or fashion the story, it's so discombobulated and disconnected from certain parts of it that it almost makes it makes it feel like this should have been an episodic type of story. I felt like it probably would have been handled a little better in that aspect. In terms of monocles, now, here's the thing.
There's a thing.
What's your thing?
I honestly kind of wish that I had the time to had before watching this to had seen it in English, just for the fact to see how it fares. Like, if the English voice acting was so horrible and realizing, like, you know, that the Japanese voice acting team did somewhat better, it may give me pause to think about maybe it's just direction. But then if the story is still just in terms of the story overall, not like the acting it out and whatnot, if the story itself still has me needing to pause it and do everything else I did, then I know for sure the film is flawed and the direction on this film needs like a second look by someone else outside of just the director. Because if he didn't do that, then I am unfortunate to say that this movie is a clear sign that he should probably stick just to directing. And that is with all due respect. I know he put his heart into this, and unfortunately, as a finished product, it does not come together for me. So I am going to give it as well a 2 out of 5 based on the two songs that are really well done throughout this movie and the two individuals that become a couple. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmphilosophers.com. There we have everything from action, comedy, suspense, thriller, even anime, where we've talked about it in certain months in the past, in the month of anime. You can check us out over at our website, filmphilosophers.com, and listen to us there. If not, and you want to listen to us on your mobile devices, you can look for us over wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look us up there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a subscribe or a follow. Listen in. Let us know how we're doing. And hey, if you think we deserve it, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes.
Thank you, Suzu. Right?
Also, you can check us out wherever on the socials at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmphilosophy101. There you can see all of our posted shenanigans as well as our extended content such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found
the only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane and Zane on Instagram.
She forgot her own handle.
Because I usually flop that. Sorry, my bad.
Yes, you can check us out over at our social pages. We have another film coming up next week in terms of anime, as we are doing this two-part review on the same director, to be honest. We will be discussing the aforementioned film that we talked about a little bit ago, Mirai.
Yay!
Right?
Yes, Mirai.
Mirai. So stick around as we dive into that one next week and kind of get all the details and see. Hopefully this situation was just a one-off and it's not a consistent crime that'll happen again. But yeah. So, like I said, that wraps up another awesome episode. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern Amy.
Class dismissed.